Welcome to The Investing Show. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. And joining me on the show, I've got Stephen Yu of the Blue Whale Growth Fund. Stephen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Simon.
Now, Blue Whale is a global fund, not just a US fund, but it is invested heavily in the US. It's a growth fund, so it invests across all different kinds of companies, not just tech companies, but it does hold quite a lot of would-be considered technology stocks. So when it came to trying to find out what on earth was going on in the world of investments, particularly looking at the story of the moment, the US tech stocks, but also valuations, because Blue Whale's quite tight on valuation as well and runs a portfolio of 25 to 30 companies, we thought you were the ideal man to get into the studio to talk to. So before we dive too much into the weeds with all of that stuff, from your perception, what do you think has gone on with markets this year?
That's a very good question to start off with. Basically, we had a massive bull market in 2019. But sitting here today, I think looking at certain sectors within the market, we probably have experienced the same post-COVID. And I think in particular, since we had the COVID sell-off in February and March, the stock markets recover quite strongly from Q2 onwards. And I think one particular sector that have done extremely well on the back of COVID would be technology-related companies. So you're talking about the likes of Amazon, PayPal, Microsoft. So basically, when we are talking about working from home, doing more shopping online, etc., those companies have benefited substantially on the back of this. But at the same time, I think it's quite easy to forget that despite the fact that we are economically, we are in a recession right now, the unemployment rate are still quite high. It's not going to come down quickly. But then the central bank have done a lot of work in the last, at the beginning of the year. Basically, they have not only cut interest rate to almost zero, at the same time, they're doing another round of quantitative easing. So if you are if the company is doing quite well on its own already, then yeah, the prices can get inflated at the same time by central bank printing money. So the valuations for some of the companies are not probably reflected that in a way.
And when we look at what's going on in the world economically, very, very deep recessions, the pushing the pause button and what that does to economies around the world. And then we factor in that cheap money, and then we look at some of the stratospheric share price rises of some of what are the world's biggest name companies since markets hit a bottom in sort of late March. There's a suggestion from many people that some parts of the stock market, particularly in the US, have detached themselves from reality. Do you think there's any? Do you think that's correct in any way, or do you think maybe for some of these big name companies, actually there's been a reappraisal of reality? And some of those of the world's most successful, you know, tech-focused companies, whatever they do, have just proved to be an awful lot more resilient than people thought they would be in times of crisis.
Yes, I think it's a combination of both. I think on one side, especially for the stocks that we define as high-quality businesses, such as Microsoft, Adobe, PayPal, or Amazon, I think they have definitely captured a lot of the digital transformation within the last 6 months compared to pre-COVID era. So without COVID, it might take them maybe 2 to 3 years to capture that level of market share. But because of COVID, the lockdown, they've managed to accelerate that transition. So that is not going away, even if we might be recovering from here, have a vaccine. So I think those are quite fundamental base. But I think that are definitely a pocket of the market that have been maybe slightly more speculative, that obviously they are also a net beneficiary on the back of COVID. They have seen an increased uptake in usage or subscribers to their business model. But then it does not change the fact that the business model in itself could be quite vulnerable to disruption from new competitors in time, etc. So if you look at the share price, these two camera stocks probably have done similar, or maybe you can even argue the second camp of the stock have done even better. But then in time, when the fundamentals come back in place, then I think we would be able to see some of these names that have done well are not justified in terms of the fundamentals.
And I mean, there's no question that there is a wave of money chasing some of these companies up. It's a very momentum-driven market. Obviously, that's benefited your fund in a way, because some of the companies that investors are chasing, you hold. But also, you're quite tight on valuation with companies as well. I read something recently where you described yourself as a value investor, but not in the sort of picking up pennies in front of a steamroller type of value investing, but in trying to buy businesses at a good price. Can you describe or enlighten us on that philosophy?
Yeah, the investment philosophy at Bluewell is very straightforward. So we invest into high quality businesses at an attractive price. I mean, I'm happy to go back to how we define high quality businesses later. But in terms of the valuation, the price in itself, it could change because not only the fundamental could play a role in that, but at the same time, the market could become overly optimistic about the prospect of a company when it's doing well. And that is something that is very important to how we put in. It's a very important input in terms of how we forecast valuation over the medium term. So basically, for any company in the fund, we would build a financial model, and then we'll make forecasts over the next couple of years, and then we try to justify our numbers relative to the market expectations. And if we feel that our forecasts are now behind the market expectation, which if we prove to be right, then it means that the company could disappoint in terms of the delivery of earnings, then we are likely to reduce our position or sell our holdings. And two companies that we have done a bit of work this year in terms of portfolio holdings were Amazon and PayPal. So during the March sell-off prior to COVID, that we were running quite a high level of cash in the fund. So we had over 11% cash in the fund. But by the end of March, we managed to redeploy all the cash to a lot of our existing holdings. And two prominent names were Amazon and PayPal. They were already a holding in the fund, but then we almost doubled our position in those two stocks. And obviously, if you look at the share price of these two companies now, at one point, they were up over 70 to 80% year to date. And that is very significant, despite the fact that they have seen a lot of benefits in terms of people shopping more online, signing up to PayPal wallet, etc. But then per our assumptions, I think that does not justify the valuation that they should be trading on. Even though they are very beautiful company, we still like them. So we would rather that we deploy some of the cash or capital into other names that have not done as well, but then we see the similar fundamentals. So since then, both of these stocks are no longer in our top 10 holding, and we deploy some of the capital into other names in the fund.
So that you still hold both of those companies, they're just not in that top 10 anymore.
Correct.
And now, one of the other companies that needs no introduction that is in your top 10 is Facebook, for example. Now, Facebook has, people always keep questioning how Facebook can continue to grow. But you see the cash flow that Facebook generates, presumably, as pretty stable and pretty capable of continuing to grow in the long term, to hold a big position in it. What's the attraction of the company?
Yeah, I think there are probably three pointers to the Facebook story. I think on a high level, I mean, you did mention value, that we do assess the value of the company. And I think even on a high level, that some people could argue that Facebook is the value stocks, because if you net the cash out on a PE multiple basis, it's actually not that expensive compared to other names that have done very well. So it's definitely on the opposite end of Amazon and PayPal in terms of valuation, even on a headline basis. Secondly, in terms of the positioning that Facebook has in the digital advertising world, they are the market leader. And obviously, a few years ago, maybe about 5 years ago, they were very much behind Google search in terms of the market, because they started later than Google. At the same time, they were trying to build out a way for advertisers to advertise even better to get a higher return on investment compared to Google search. And then you can reach out to different audience. And I think they have done a very exceptional job. And if you speak to any advertisers, they would probably tell you the differences between whether you should advertise on Google or Facebook. And I think they serve a very different purpose. So I think in terms of the market positioning that Facebook have got for themselves is very unique. Obviously, on the back of COVID, you can imagine that more businesses and transactions are going to be done online, which means that in order to reach out to consumers, you would need to advertise to draw our attention. And there's an argument to make that digital advertising is like your high street rent if you are a merchant. So in the past, you will open a store, you pay the rent, and then hopefully some people will come into your shop and buy your stuff. But in the digital world, there's no store front. I mean, you have a website, but then you need to pay the rent to appear in front of customers. So that's not going to change. And we do see a lot of interesting kind of drivers within the business. I think the last point that I would make on Facebook, obviously, I think is very debated topic, in especially in the US, is the antitrust argument. I mean, we have gone through that a few times. We've gone through a different variant of that argument a few times since Cambridge Analytica a few years ago. I think at the moment, obviously, in the US, some of these bigger companies, there's an argument to be made that maybe they should be broken up. So they would be a smaller company rather than have a monopoly position. But then if you look at Facebook in particular, they do have a business called WhatsApp. I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with that. And I think in the developed market, no one's smartphone would not have WhatsApp on there to communicate with your friends and family. But as far as Facebook is concerned, they have not actually made any money on the back of that business. At the moment, Facebook make money from the Facebook page and Instagram. And then they also have WhatsApp, which have over 2 billion users. So by breaking Facebook up in some ways could actually release value for shareholders like us. So we probably don't want a company to be broken up, but actually it could be beneficial. So I think if you put the three together and looking at the valuation, it's actually quite decently valued, and we feel that there's some outperformance from here.
And you hold 25 to 30 companies, don't you, at any one time within the fund? Is it 25 at the moment?
Yes, about that. Yep.
And that's all around the world. So if you're only holding 25 companies around the world, I guess part of the story of investing, how you invest, is also the companies that you don't hold. And not because you think that they're no good, but that there is a reason why they don't manage to make the cut for that 25. Probably one of the most high-profile companies this year has to be Tesla. And certainly its share price rise has been absolutely stratospheric. What is it about Tesla that makes you think it's not quite right for our portfolio?
That is a very good question, because obviously if you look at the share price of Tesla, it's done extremely well. It's definitely done a lot better than a lot of names that we have in the fund. But we have never at Blue Whale considered Tesla as a high quality business. So if we go through the different parameters that we score a company, such as market positioning, return on invested capital, recession-proof, structural growth drivers, etc., Tesla in itself would score quite lowly. So it doesn't even pass our radar, quality radar, to make it to our coverage list. And I think the problem for Tesla, as far as we're concerned, is the competitive positioning in the auto space. Obviously, the design of the car is beautiful. They probably have some IP in terms of the battery and electric power, or even maybe some sort of like software that they run on the car. But then if you really look at the auto space, there are many other good companies out there, and they are quite sizable companies, such as like Volkswagen, Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Porsche, Toyota, GM, I mean, you name it. I mean, I probably can say Tesla is one of the better brands out there, but they are not the only brand out there as far as consumers concerned. So, and then at the same time, before this year, they have been loss-making for a long time. So valuation itself is quite difficult to square up. Like, you will need to make some heroic assumption that they're going to account for. I think there were some people who suggest that in order to justify the valuation, they probably need to account for like 50% of the world production in time. I mean, that is not easy to do, because firstly, you need to get the production facility in place first. But then the way that we see it is, obviously, I mean, I don't know whether you would say that we got it wrong, because we miss out on the share price rise. But then we would probably say Tesla is quite a speculative company. So for every Tesla out there, there would be a lot of similar kind of conceptual stocks or company that might not have done well, and we might not even remember them now. So I think it's quite a different game. And for us, holding about just 25 or 30 companies, for every single stock in the fund that we would need to have a high level of conviction. And for a stock company like Tesla, I think it's quite difficult to get to that level of conviction. So we'll pass on that.
Mm-hmm. Another company that's done very well and has a subscriber model, which I know when we've spoken in the past, you've said subscription is definitely a plus for companies. Adobe, which is one of your biggest holdings, the subscription model that they've shifted to, they've done very, very well off the back of it. But the company I'm talking about is Netflix. It's seen a big growth in subscriber numbers. I think everybody was looking at Netflix and going, well, how are they going to get more people to get Netflix? Surely everyone who's got Netflix wants it. And then everyone was told to stay at home for a few months and not go anywhere. And lo and behold, more people got Netflix. But you don't. Netflix isn't in the portfolio either, is it? Is that, again, a competition thing? It's a very crowded field that's going on there?
Yes, I think that's correct. So we don't consider Netflix as a high quality business neither. Not so much about the subscription model, because we do like a business model that are subscription based, so that people pay a recurring kind of income stream to the company, and it's actually quite a beautiful model. But then in order to translate that into the bottom line, which is profit margin and return on invested capital back to the shareholder, then you need to be the market leader in terms of what you do. And as far as Netflix is concerned, they are spending about $15 billion, up to about, I think, close to $15 billion a year on content. And the way that we see it is very similar to football clubs such as Manchester United, Juventus, etc. You would only pay top dollar for the next best strikers, midfielders forever. And that is very inflationary. And if you look at the competitive space where Netflix operates in, you have Disney Plus, HBO, Comcast, Amazon Prime, YouTube, etc. And a lot of these companies are spending top dollars for talents, producer, content. And so for Netflix to sign up new subscribers, they have about 300 million now. They were the first mover. I think that is perfect. And they will continue to grow. But can they ever deliver a high return on invested capital over the medium term? That is a question mark, because until they become the de facto at home cinema app that we have, then yeah, they can charge top dollar and then they can pay less for content. But at the moment, I think the competition is too strong to make it a clear cut, and we pass on that as well.
Mm-hmm. And just finally, before we finish up, so we're running out of time. In terms of how the portfolio is positioned now, do you look at, are you, presumably you are actively looking ahead because that's your job, but are you looking ahead maybe 6 months, a year down the line and thinking things might change slightly in terms of whether there is that wind blowing behind the tech companies and the big US names and things like that?
Yeah, we are constantly looking for new ideas, and then obviously we are forward looking as far as how we think about the companies that we have and also about the next set of opportunities. And if I recall, when we first started 3 years ago, we probably have half the level of technology related names in the funnel exposure. And since over the last 3 years, that we have almost doubled in terms of exposure. But then that's historical performance, and what's next? And I think on the back of COVID, that there's definitely some opportunities lying around, that some companies have been impacted by COVID, but we feel that the valuation is quite interesting. So it's quite fair to assume that in the next 3 years that we would definitely probably shift the position of portfolio, maybe a bit more away from tech, maybe go into other sectors that are more interesting, or maybe the next game changes. But for the time being, I think the economic uncertainties are still not clear. Are we going to get a vaccine? What's going to happen with Brexit, election in the US? And I think there's still a lot of question marks. So I think we are taking it slow, but we can see that the opportunity set in the next 3 years will be quite different to what we have experienced over the last 3 years.
Okay, Stephen, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you very much for watching The Investing Show. Join us next time. Goodbye.